Imagine you are standing in a sleek, glass-walled corporate boardroom. Like, a mandate has just come down from the CEO, right? And the mandate is basically, we need an AI strategy and we need it
Oh,
yesterday.
yeah, we have all seen that exact panic.
Right. So what is the very first thing you see happen in that room? I mean, someone inevitably grabs a dry erase marker, walks right up to the whiteboard, and just starts redrawing the organizational chart.
They just start erasing a box here, merging a division over there.
Exactly. And suddenly, like magic, the total headcount number gets smaller.
And, to them, it looks highly decisive. It photographs beautifully for a quarterly board deck.
Oh, for sure.
Yet, when you actually dive into the mechanics of how companies function, it becomes clear that this reflex is almost always a massive misstep.
Well, welcome to another deep dive. Today, we are looking at this brilliant essay by Vinnie Carpenter. It's titled, Your First AI Reorg Should Be the Work, Not the People.
It is such a good read.
It really is. And it argues that this exact reflex, firing first and asking questions later, is completely
We have a
bad.
mentally backward, yeah.
So our mission today is to guide you, the listener, through the actual correct order of operations for integrating AI into a company. We really want to help you avoid the disastrous invisible costs of a botched restructuring.
Because doing it right requires a fundamental shift in how we view the relationship between technology, the actual process, and human labor.
Okay, let's unpack this. Why is it that when highly intelligent, experienced leaders are faced with new AI tools, their immediate, almost biological reflex is to start moving boxes around an org chart? Like, why touch the people before the process?
It really comes down to this concept called legibility.
Legibility.
Yeah, so headcount is it's the ultimate legible lever for an executive. If you think about it from their perspective, a corporate org chart is clean.
Right, it's just a bunch of neat little squares.
Exactly. It is a single trackable number. It moves in one direction, usually down, right, when we're talking about cost savings, and it fits perfectly on one single line of a spreadsheet.
Which is very comforting if you're a CEO.
Exactly. Workflows, on the other hand, are inherently messy. I mean, they resist a clean headline. Redesigning how a team actually functions on a daily basis takes painstaking, really microscopic work.
So leaders just naturally reach for the lever that is easiest to read from a distance.
Right. And unfortunately, legibility quietly gets mistaken for correctness.
Okay, wait, I have to push back a little on that because isn't headcount math just, well, straightforward
What do
math?
you mean?
Like, if a company buys an AI enterprise subscription for, say, $50 a month, and that tool can suddenly output the volume of a junior copywriter or a junior coder.
Yeah, I see where you're going.
Right, so they can eliminate a human salary that costs, $10,000 a month. $50 is obviously way less than 10,000. It just seems like a total no-brainer.
Well, that is exactly what the source material calls fake math.
Fake math.
Yeah, the concept of the salary for subscription swap is incredibly dangerous. It only looks at the sticker price of the software and completely ignores all the hidden operational costs.
Because you aren't just paying a flat subscription fee.
Far from it. I mean, the real cost of integrating AI includes inference.
Okay, just to ground that for a second for everyone, we aren't talking about buying a traditional software license like, I don't know, Microsoft Word.
No, not at all. Inference means you are paying for the raw computing power every single time that bot processes data or generates a response.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so if a badly designed workflow sends an AI into an infinite loop of analyzing the wrong data, you aren't just wasting time, you are literally burning server cash by the minute.
That is terrifying.
And then you have to add in the human supervision required to constantly monitor the AI, right? Plus the massive amounts of human rework necessary when the AI inevitably hallucinates or just completely gets the context wrong.
Which it absolutely will. And the essay actually points to Jack Dorsey's very loud, very public plan to cut the staff at Block by nearly half. It calls that the loudest version of this bet.
Oh, definitely.
But it also uses Klarna as this major cautionary tale. What exactly happened over there?
So Klarna kind of serves as the canary in the coal mine for this entire transition. They aggressively automated their highly visible customer support work to, hit these big cost-saving targets.
Right, getting rid of the people answering the easy questions.
Exactly. But the problem is that the work itself doesn't just disappear because you fired the people doing it. The invisible work, like the complex edge cases, the highly nuanced customer frustrations, it just boomeranged right back into the company.
So, what did that actually look like on the ground?
It manifested as severe quality problems. There was a crushing escalation load on the human staff that were actually left behind, and just massive rework. So the supposed financial savings essentially vanished into operational chaos.
Man. So if I'm understanding this, doing the org chart first is essentially like firing all your warehouse workers because you just bought a fleet of autonomous forklifts.
Yes, that's a great analogy.
But you haven't actually rearranged the aisles or updated the barcodes or even figured out where the charging stations go. You are just dumping robots into a maze designed for humans and, I don't know, just hoping the packages ship.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. And the source actually brings in Melvin Conway's 1968 observation here.
Oh, Conway's law.
Right. Conway's law basically states that organizations build software systems that end up mirroring their own internal communication structures.
Which is fascinating on its own.
It is. But Carpenter argues we need Conway's law in reverse right now. Like, if your organizational structure is eventually going to mirror your system, then you must design the system first.
And only then do you shape the human structure to actually support it.
Exactly. You don't rewire a building before you know where the rooms are going to go.
Okay, so if the org chart is the absolute last thing we should touch, we obviously need to know what to touch first. Which I guess brings us to the actual daily path of the work.
The workflows.
Mm.
And this is where we have to confront a very, very common corporate illusion. A Jira board is not a workflow.
Hold on, I have to challenge you there. Because Jira is literally sold to executives as enterprise workflow management software.
Oh, I know it is.
Like, if a board full of tickets moving from to-do to in-progress to done isn't a workflow, what on earth is it?
I mean, it is a shadow of the work. A Jira board tracks date changes. It tells you a ticket changed from in-progress to under review.
Okay.
What it does not tell you is that the ticket sat in a random Slack channel for 3 days waiting for a senior developer to find, like, 20 free minutes to actually look at it.
Oh, I see.
To truly understand the work, you have to trace a single unit of output from the moment of the initial request all the way to production. You have to physically spot every single place where that work just waits in a queue behind a scarce human resource.
And this is really where AI fundamentally breaks the old model, isn't it? Because for 20 years, the entire technology industry optimized its workflows around one core assumption.
And what was that?
That production-like, the physical act of typing the code out was the slow, expensive part?
Yes. That was the universal bottleneck. Companies protected their senior engineers at all costs. They routed absolutely everything to optimize their time spent writing code.
But today, an AI agent can produce a highly credible first draft of a code implementation in, what, 2 minutes?
If that. The slow part is no longer production. Production has suddenly become completely abundant.
So the traffic jam just shifts.
It completely shifts to the front end and the back end. The new bottlenecks are specification, meaning telling the AI exactly what you want it to do with absolute precision.
Right, the prompt.
Right, and then review on the back end,
yeah.
Actually verifying that what the AI did is correct and secure. So a workflow designed to protect slow production is completely the wrong shape for a world of rapid, abundant production.
Let me bring this to life with a specific example from the text, because the technical mechanics of this are just mind-blowing to me.
Go for it.
Imagine a team hands an autonomous AI agent a really vague Jira ticket. It just says, clean up the offflow. That's it.
A classic vague ticket.
Exactly. So the agent goes to work, but because the specification was so vague, it confidently misreads half the repository. It edits the completely wrong abstraction layer, meaning it messes with the hidden architectural scaffolding of the app instead of just the surface code.
Which is a nightmare.
It gets worse. It then writes comprehensive passing tests that perfectly validate its own hallucinated misunderstanding. And then it just opens a highly confident pull request to merge the code.
It's a confident, localized success.
Yeah.
That is actually a massive systemic failure.
And now a senior human engineer has to spend 3 hours unwinding that mess. They have to figure out what the AI did, why it thought changing the abstraction layer was a good idea, and then manually revert the code.
Which totally defeats the purpose of having the AI do it.
Exactly. If that is happening in your company, you do not have a headcount problem. You have a broken workflow. If you just cut the human engineer to save money, but you keep that broken path, you haven't optimized anything.
No, you've just automated the confusion.
You've built a machine that generates messes at the speed of light.
Which is why fixing the path comes first. The workflow lacked a rigid specification at the beginning, and it lacked a strict acceptance gate at the end.
Right.
Once you fix that path and actually clarify the specifications, you certainly have digital AI agents acting efficiently alongside humans. But of course, that introduces an entirely new layer of complexity.
Right, because now you have a road where both humans and bots are driving, so who actually has the right of way?
What's fascinating here is the concept of tacit authority.
Tacit authority. What does that look like in practice?
So in any organization, the most critical decisions are often made quietly, implicitly, in the heads of highly experienced people.
Like unwritten rules.
Exactly. Think about a veteran systems engineer. Based on, say, 5 years of institutional muscle memory, that engineer just knows that a minor cosmetic update to the database is completely safe to ship on a Friday afternoon.
But a structural schema change requires a second set of eyes because it might take down the checkout page.
Precisely. It's unwritten policy. It's just understood through cultural osmosis. That knowledge vanishes the second you lay them off.
Wow. But how do you manage that tacit authority when the worker is an AI? I mean, a bot doesn't feel Friday afternoon burnout. It doesn't know how to read the room.
It doesn't, which is exactly why an AI reorg forces this issue completely out of the shadows. You simply cannot rely on vibes or unwritten rules with an algorithm.
You have to be explicit.
You have to write down explicitly what an agent is allowed to decide autonomously versus what it is merely allowed to recommend to a human. You are forced to define rigid operational boundaries.
The essay gives some great practical examples of this, like, an AI agent can open a pull request, meaning it can suggest a code change, but is it allowed to actually merge that code to the main branch?
Right, and that distinction matters so much.
Because merging to the main branch triggers the deployment pipeline. It pushes that code to the live environment where the actual customer interacts with it. Or, like, can an agent draft a reply to a frustrated customer? Or is it allowed to actually hit send without a human checking the tone?
And these are not just, you know, philosophical thought experiments for a corporate retreat.
No, they're critical.
These are hard operational policies that must be coded into the system before you change who is sitting in the room.
That makes total sense.
If you sit down and honestly map out these decision rights, you might discover something shocking. Many leaders realize they never actually needed a massive reduction in staff.
They just needed a clarification of authority.
Exactly. The previous chaos wasn't from having too many people. It was from undefined, overlapping decision rights.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Deciding who gets to make a call is only one half of the equation. What happens when the AI makes the wrong call?
Oh, the fallout.
Yeah, the distinction between making a decision and owning the fallout from that decision feels like the most dangerous trap in this entire transition.
It really is. Decision rights are simply about who executes the action in the moment. Ownership is entirely different. Ownership is about who is held accountable when that action blows up the system.
And who is responsible for maintaining it over time.
Exactly.
Because when you drop an AI agent into a workflow, you are not just upgrading your calculator or, you know, switching from Google Docs to Word. You are deploying a live production system, and live production systems are inherently volatile.
Which brings us to the starkest warning in the entire essay. When you deploy an AI model, you are dealing with prompt drift.
Wait, can we pause on that? Because when I think of software, it's usually deterministic, like 2 + 2 = 4. What do you mean by prompt drift?
That is the critical difference with generative AI. When you build an AI agent using a large language model, the foundation underneath it is constantly shifting.
Like the model itself changes.
Yes. The company providing the AI might update the model's training weights on a random Tuesday. And suddenly, the exact same prompt that successfully generated a clean JSON file on Monday now outputs a slightly different format.
Oh, no. And that breaks your entire downstream data pipeline.
It shatters it. Software dependencies shift. APIs change. The guardrails need constant tuning just to maintain the exact baseline performance you had last week.
So an AI agent deployed without a named human owner is basically a production system without an on-call rotation.
The author literally calls it an incident with a delay timer.
Wow, an incident with a delay timer.
Yeah, it is only a matter of time before it breaks, and when it breaks, no one's pager goes off.
This completely exposes the fatal mechanical flaw of the headcount-first reorg. Let's walk through the trap for the listener. Say a company wants to trim the budget.
Classic scenario.
Yeah. So they fire the human employee who implicitly owned a specific messy workflow. They just hand that employee's daily tasks to a new AI agent. And then, because everyone is popping champagne and celebrating the cost savings, they completely forget to assign a new human owner to manage, monitor, and maintain that AI.
They literally walk away thinking they saved a job.
But they didn't. They orphaned a workflow. They created a massive corporate liability that is just ticking away in the
It's a
background.
disaster waiting to happen.
Every single agent operating in a production environment must have a named human owner. It needs a written specification, defined guardrails, and a clear, tested path to roll back the system if it goes rogue.
And that is not bloated corporate overhead, by the way.
Not at all.
That is the thin line between a functioning operating model and a total meltdown.
Okay, so you've paved the road. You've set the traffic lights with explicit decision rights, and you've assigned a human traffic cop to own the outcomes. But before you finalize this massive structural shift across the entire company, how do you actually prove to your board of directors that it's working?
Well, you have to measure it. You need evaluation loops. It's the evidence-based
Joe,
approach.
fourth step.
Tragically, the evaluation loop is the phase that gets skipped the most. And without it, you fall right back into the Klarna trap. Quality just erodes slowly under a corporate narrative that everyone desperately wants to believe.
Because, I mean, the executives want to believe the AI is flawless to justify the layoffs they just ordered.
Exactly.
And the middle managers want to believe it because hitting AI adoption targets looks incredible on their performance reviews. So the actual quality of the product just slips slowly and invisibly until a massive customer churn crisis forces a complete reversal.
Which is why, to prevent the hallucination of success, you absolutely must instrument the work before you cut the people.
You need a baseline.
You have to set a baseline metric of how the team performs today. If you reorganize the staff first and then try to measure performance a month later, you have zero baseline. You're just guessing from memory whether things are genuinely better or just superficially cheaper.
And the essay is clear that we need entirely new metrics for this new reality, right? Generating a million lines of code with an AI agent means absolutely nothing if it's garbage code that breaks the app.
Exactly.
So you have to measure accepted output, not just generated output. You need to track escaped defects, meaning errors that actually made it past the AI, past the human reviewer, and into the real world. You have to track cycle time, and crucially, the volume of human rework required to fix the bot's mistakes.
Because the defining metric of this new AI economy is fundamentally shifting. For a long time, the big flex was tokens consumed. First, redesign the work. That means physically mapping the workflows to spot the cues, assigning explicit decision rights so the bots know their limits, naming human owners for every automated system, and setting up strict evaluation loops.
That's phase one.
Phase two, you run the system, you let the hybrid team of humans and agents operate in this newly designed environment to gather hard, unassailable evidence.
Actually test it in reality.
Exactly. And then third, and only after you have that validated data showing where the work actually concentrates and where it thins out, do you reshape the organizational chart.
So the org chart is dead last. What does this all mean? If we connect this to the bigger picture, it just changes everything about how we view technology in the workplace.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the historical bottleneck for innovation was never the coding language. It wasn't the shift from on-premise servers to the cloud, and it certainly isn't the headcount.
Right.
The true bottleneck has always been whether the work itself is designed well enough and specified clearly enough for someone or something to do it well.
AI hasn't changed that fundamental truth of business at all. It has just exponentially raised the price of getting it wrong, and it has moved the bill to the very front of the room.
It really has.
Well, this has been such an incredible deep dive. We really want to champion this slower path. Yes, taking the time to redesign the work, trace the Jira tickets back to their actual origins, and establish true ownership might not get a CEO a dramatic overnight 24% pop in the stock price.
Unlikely to do that, yeah.
But it is the only way to ensure your company won't boomerang into a catastrophic quality crisis 6 months down the line.
It is the defining difference between building a resilient, future-proof system and just, moving boxes on a whiteboard to look busy.
Absolutely. We want to leave you with a final thought to mull over today, something to really examine in your own professional life. Think about your own workplace right now. If an autonomous AI agent were to make a critical, wildly expensive error tomorrow morning at exactly 2 a.m., do you know exactly whose phone is supposed to ring? And if the answer is no, what does that say about the true structure of your organization?
A vital question every leader should be asking.
Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. Keep learning, keep pushing back on the easy answers, and never stop questioning the status quo. Until next time.